I'm Dr. Vanessa Sinclair, an artist and psychoanalyst based in Sweden who works with people internationally, and this is episode 291 of Rendering Unconscious Podcast. My guest today is Jason Hoff. He's here to talk about his new book, Can I See Your Niche? A collection of collages and cut-ups. We also dish about writing, Britney Spears' book, and Matthew Perry's. Jason is the author of several other books, including Bent Book, Love Case, and Harsh Cravings. He's a queer writer and editor living in Brooklyn, New York. You can follow his work at Instagram at Hoffwit, H-A-A-F-W-I-T, where he posts his collages and cut-ups on a regular basis. Jason and I are having a book launch together with another Tripart author, Advat, at Quimby's Bookstore in Brooklyn, New York, on Saturday, May 11th. Stay tuned at our Instagrams as well as at Quimby's Bookstore, New York City, to find out more information about this happening. I'll be launching Things Happen. Jason will be launching Can I See Your Niche? And Advat is launching A Spiral of Objects. Links to all of our social media, as well as Quimby's Bookstore, and all of our books can be found in the show notes as well as at renderingunconscious.org. And as always, if you're going to order these books from Amazon anyway, why not go to the link at renderingunconscious.org or in the show notes and click on the link there. At the suggestion of a Rendering Unconscious podcast listener, I did become a member of the Amazon Affiliates Program, so when you click on those links, it does give a little kickback, 30, 50 cents, to the podcast. Every little bit helps and is appreciated. You can support the podcast at my new Patreon, Rendering Unconscious's own Patreon, patreon.com/renderingunconscious, where I've just posted a list of books I recommend. I post weekly musings about psychoanalysis, different thoughts, different guest spotlights at Rendering Unconscious Patreon. If you're into creative writing and magic and art, you may wish to join my Patreon with my husband, Carl Abrahamson, where we post exclusive content every week on Mondays. We call it Magic Mondays, and we post about our writing, practices, cut-ups, collages, magic, ritual, astrology, tarot. We also have a Discord where you can join and chat with other like-minded people from our Patreon community. The Discord is available for people at both Rendering Unconscious and my Patreon with Carl. So join either place and have fun. Rendering Unconscious was awarded the 2023 Godiva Award for Digital Media from the National Association for the Advancement of Psychoanalysis. Huge, huge thanks to everyone in our Patreon community, all the Rendering Unconscious guests, fans, and listeners. Your support over the past 6.5 years is greatly appreciated. There is a video of this episode at YouTube. Just visit Tripar Film's YouTube channel. That's T-R-A-P-A-R-T Film at YouTube. Hello, Jason. Welcome back to Rendering Unconscious. I think this is your fourth time.
I think it is third. No, I think maybe fourth.
I think fourth.
Yeah. Thanks You're for having me back.
One of the top ranking guests.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I'm so excited to talk about your new book. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
And also Brittany.
I like that we're like merging them together.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good combo. Everyone needs these books.
Yeah.
Can I See Your Niche by Jason Hoff?
You should sell them together.
And The Woman in Me by Britney Spears. They actually go well together, the colors. Look.
Yeah, they do.
The pink, it's like similar. So you mm-hmm. all have a similar aesthetic.
Yeah.
Which one should we start with?
I guess we can start with Can I See Your Niche?
I love it. Cut up poems and poetry and collages. And I wanted to say, we talked about this when Carl and I did our little 23rd Mind TV thing at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. But I really love that you have the aesthetic from all the old porns like I do.
Yeah.
I mean, this aesthetic.
Yeah. I mean, I have access to it, but really Kyle Anderson, my husband, he's a collector of sort of everything. So he has probably every honcho magazine from like, I don't know, 70 to 90. So it's like whenever I do want to make something, I kind of just blindly pull anything.
Perfect. Yeah. It's all good. Everything from these magazines is good. I have lots of Playboy, Penthouse, and Wii and all these kinds of things. And it's like, mm-hmm. like everything's good. The ads, the texts, like the images, mm-hmm. everything is good. It's just like such a great aesthetic during that time period.
Yeah. It's also like super self-serious. So it's sort of like, I find like no matter what writing I put over the image, even if the writing is really serious, when you combine like serious writing with a self-serious picture, it kind of just becomes a joke. I feel like those two things cancel each other out, and then it just kind of becomes like tongue-in-cheek, but not even on purpose.
It's all very tongue-in-cheek. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like great social commentary through random cut-up images and words, but they're also like very, the stock that you're pulling from is well-curated. So it's not totally random. It's random out of a curated, awesome stock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Carl said there was a lot more images he wanted to put in there that were great, but they were like actual porn, and the little Amazon censors and stuff would reject our book. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is that once Carl sent me the proof, I sort of censored a little bit anyway. Well, more than a little bit because of Instagram and social media. So when I saw the book, it didn't feel censored. It just, I don't know. And sometimes it's like, sometimes if it's really graphic, it works. But I think there's also something in covering up or like within the censorship that also kind of creates its own narrative a little bit. Because I guess it does leave something to the imagination. So yeah, it didn't feel censored.
Yeah, I like it both ways. Sometimes it's fun to have it covered. Sometimes it's fun to have it out.
Yeah.
I should probably follow your trajectory, though, and like cover up things in my art more when I post it on Instagram. But the bots already hate me so much. I started a new account for Rendering Unconscious to try to like go around the bots since they hate my regular account so much. But it's already limiting that account, even though I haven't posted any art or anything. I don't know if it's like connected to me in the same way. So it's like, oh, she's trying to make this new account. So let's limit that too. But it won't let me post more than one post at a time. And if I try to post a second post, it will not post the text. Mm-hmm. It will only post the image, but no text. And I'm just like, why does it hate me? I don't know.
I mean, I think it like hates like sexuality. I think it really hates queer sexuality. I have a lot of friends who are artists and graphic artists, and their accounts are either shut down or threatened to be shut down all the time. Yeah.
It's really frustrating. That's why Twitter was great, because it didn't do that, but now it sucks too. So
yeah. I was never on Twitter, but I mean, I know that it did have a lack of censorship.
It was fun, and there was a moment where it was like I met so many great people because whatever they were doing with the algorithms, they were like really pairing me with like interesting people that we actually like really did click, and like so many podcast guests are from Twitter.
But cool. That doesn't exist anymore. Now I can't see anyone or anyone. I don't even see Carl's posts.
Really?
Like, hello, algorithms, can you work at all, please? It's mostly just ads and stuff, you know, or like whoever has like the most hits, like they show you their stuff. But a lot of times they're trying to do the thing like TikTok where it's like things that are for you instead of just things you follow. So it's just showing you basically like ads or like popular posts that aren't even people that you follow. It's really sucks. It's everything is just like so blatantly ad platforms now, all of them. Really.
Yeah, it's all over.
It's all over. It was fun for a second, but then it destroyed world politics and everything else.
Yeah.
Well, good. So everyone needs to get Can I See Your Niche? Ooh. It's really fun. Highly recommend. Also, I just had a thought because I just, okay, so wait, we're going to put Brittany on in a second, but then we also have me. I just got this yesterday, my Things Happen book.
Yeah, mine arrived just a couple days ago.
Oh, good.
Congratulations.
I'm so glad because people were getting them and I was like, where's mine? But now it's here. I'm happy. It's a relief that it's out there because I worked on it for like more than 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it was like very intense. And a lot of the stories are very personal stories, even though it's all fiction. Mm-hmm. So it was like a lot to work through in putting it together. But I've read it many times now and I like it. I think it's a fun book. If I hadn't made it, I would like this book and I'd be like, this girl's awesome. Like, I want to be her friend.
Yeah, good.
That's always a good sign. And I just, so this is, I haven't told anybody about this stuff yet because it's just happening. I'm coming to New York, which I haven't been to New York since 2018.
Wow.
I was invited to speak at a conference at Columbia University on Otto Rank because the organizer, Nathan Gorick, said that Otto Rank's ideas, he read a piece of mine on like art and artists. And he said, my ideas seemed really similar to Otto Rank's. And I was like, I've only really read The Trauma of Birth and like the doppelganger stuff by him. So like, let me check out his stuff about artists. And it's like, totally. I'm like, oh, I'm like channeling Otto Rank from 100 years ago, basically. And making him a little modern sense. And more modern and feminine, I guess.
But when are you coming?
So the conference is the 8th through the 10th.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go to Florida before that and see my parents.
8th through the 10th of this month or next month?
No, of May.
Of May. Okay.
May 8th through the 10th. And then I'm going to go to Florida first to see my parents because I haven't been to Florida since 2019.
Yeah.
And I just got noticed today that I have a book launch event for this book.
That's amazing.
Which is what brought this to mind. And then it's going to be at Books and Books, which is like, oh my God, what a dream to have a book launch event at Books and Books. And they have a Coconut Grove store now. So I'm going to do it at Books and Books, Coconut Grove, May 2nd. So that's very cool.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing. And then I just had the thought, since I'm going to be in New York, maybe we should have a book launch event for our little book baby.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
You know, best friends here. They're both like cut up method books.
Yeah, they look like they go together.
Yeah, they do go together.
Mm-hmm.
Cut up method Trapar books. So maybe we can do something while I'm there.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's set that up. That would be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I got excited. That was the idea I had, but then I had to like explain where the idea is coming from. Like, hey, we should do a book launch event in New York out of the blue.
Yeah, let's do that.
We're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I love that. Okay, now we have to dish about Brit.
Yeah.
How much did you love this book?
I liked it a lot. I read it in like, so there's only been a couple books that like I read in one sitting. I think I read that within a day. And then I also read Rosemary's Baby like within a day. So I do have like an interest in Britney Spears and her story. But it was conversational and it's like this fast read, but like with pretty heavy content in it at the same time. But yeah, I really liked it. I also liked how it wasn't like chapter one, like this subject, chapter two. It was kind of like roaming, which like I assume her head is like that a little bit to begin with. But it was sort of like things were just weaving in and out. And I thought it was just like a cool memoir.
Yeah, I really liked it. So I decided I had to read this book. And, you know, I'm not a big Britney fan, like music-wise and stuff. I'm just like a few years too old, I think, because I think she's like just a couple years younger than me. And so like I remember I worked at Target in like the music, movies, and book section when like Hit Me Baby One More Time came out, and I was probably like 19 or 20. So it's just a little bit too old. Like I was, that wasn't cool. You know what I mean? So I didn't get into her in that way. And I just remember that seeing that video. Whenever you work at a music store and something comes out, it's like all those things you remember so well because they play like the same loop over and over and over the whole time you're working. It's just like it's burned into your brain. But anyway, when I heard this came out, I was like, I have to read this book. I felt compelled. So I read her book and I read Matthew Perry's book, both over winter break. And I was like, who am I going to talk about this with? I was like, Jason, obviously. Yeah. Who else would I talk about Britney with? But I feel like this story is so important. And the fact that this can happen to someone at her level is like, it's shocking. It's tragic. But I think she did a really good job also of like, she's clearly done like work on herself and like thinking about how these things are connected and showing how it's like happened to other women in her family before her, because this is exactly like what happened.
Mother, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it gets repeated over and over. And the fact that even when you're like this huge of a star and in that much in the public eye and people can still not know what's going on in that way, it's like,
I thought was kind of shocking with it that like one that that can and does still happen, but of how public she was and how much was going on behind the scenes, even though it's like, if she steps outside, she's, I mean, at one point she was so famous, she steps outside, she's being like hounded, but the public just didn't know. I mean, I guess some fans did know because they started the Free Britney movement, and that whole thing is kind of insane too. Amazing. It was her fans that like shone a light on it.
Yeah, amazing. And I love how she like felt like she had this psychic connection that somehow they knew that she was in distress and they could like, yeah, they could like sense that she wasn't doing well and they wanted to make sure that she was okay and like basically came to her rescue. It's beautiful.
Yeah, the part that like, the part that I remember was, it was like towards the end when she was institutionalized again. And I think she said something about like a nurse being on a computer or something. Or she was
told it up.
Yeah. And she was told like, oh, there's these people outside like with signs. And I just thought like, what, like, it's kind of like a stunning visual, like this pop star institutionalized. And then like outside where she can't see, there's people with signs to say free her. I mean, it sounds like fiction.
It should be a movie for sure. They need to make a movie of her life. Yeah. I'm sure it's already in the works.
Yeah. I'm sure there's like bidding wars over it.
Yeah. No, it is totally cinematic. And I love how she gets like spiritual and like also brings that element into it, like with her like understanding of like the universe or how people are connected, because I feel like it's good that she's more open to kind of magical thinking, and maybe make her fans or other people also more comfortable with their own magical thinking that's also like pathologized in popular culture and psychiatry and stuff like that. That's good too.
Yeah, I mean, I think she kind of had to adopt that. I mean, how else would it make sense, like the situation that you're and
yeah, and that's how it happens. And I also like these conservatorships, I have to say, when I was in Brooklyn, I was thinking about talking about this forever. And so the fact that she's talking about it is really important, because I didn't really know who to talk about it with. But like I learned when I worked in Brooklyn that these conservatorships are happening like all the time. And like, for example, like there was this whole racket that was undercover with me and this other psychologist friend of mine. She had a patient who was in one of these conservatorships, and like she didn't understand the medical decisions that were being made for her patient, and like she felt like they weren't in the patient's best interest. And then instead of just like when you work in these hospitals, everyone that works there, I mean, God bless them trying to work in these like hospitals that are severely underfunded and they're totally overworked and everything, but everyone's kind of like glassed over and like kind of dead inside feeling like they're just so overworked and underpaid and stressed out and working with like the most severe cases of like mental illness and like physical health and in the worst circumstances, and they have no funding and whatever. But like people tend to not follow up. Like I worked in an AIDS clinic, and like when I worked at other hospitals before that, if somebody, one of our patients passed away, there was always a meeting about like a mortality meeting of like what happened in this person's case and could this have been prevented in some way or could we have done better in some way to like have helped this person that died. But when I worked in the AIDS clinic, like literally one of my patients, not just one of the clinic patients, one of my patients even died like every month. And that not including everyone else's patients that died, like multiple people were dying like all the time. And like, there was never any of these meetings, you know, it's like, it just like weren't happening. But anyway, so my friend who's like a go-getter, kind of more type A personality, she's like, what is going on with this woman? And she like uncovered this whole thing where like this woman had a conservator. She was older, and because she didn't have any family that was able to like take care of her, she was taken over by this person. The conservator had never met her in real life. It was all just like paperwork that was done. And she had been actually like forcibly removed from her home sold and all of her stuff sold and put into this hospital where she was living. And where did all that money go? It went to this like conservator's like business. And then on top of that, when my friend was like really pushing it, this conservator literally was in charge of like 500 people, like not a few people, like 500 people. And he didn't even meet them. Like it was just like some like business thing where it's just like, oh, this person, you know, they're not doing well. They need to be hospitalized. There's no family. And they just shuffle them into these kinds of arrangements. And like, this is just someone's job. And then on top of it, if you look it up, you don't actually need like a license, like a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a medical doctor to become one of these conservators, you know?
I mean, her father.
Yeah, exactly. Her dad did it. So it's like this person, you could just like set up this kind of business and start taking people's shit, you know, and just like locking them away. And like, well, no one's going to complain because they don't have any family. So it's like a whole crazy racket.
Mm-hmm. What I thought was like, she goes into it in the book, like more in detail. But what I thought was obviously really shady was she was giving like names and kind of like numbers and like what people were, that's what I was impressed by. She was like giving like what people were making off of her, and she was giving specific numbers, which I like that.
Yeah. Also shows that she was aware.
Yeah. So yeah, was aware and had been like digging. Mm-hmm. So it was like one of the guys who was like sort of a part of her legal team, like also had stakes in like the touring company that she was attached to. And so like all of the numbers and the profits and like the roles were all mixed. And then it was, everyone is profiting off of her, but just the fact that that exists and there's no, it's like, who's checking? Like,
no one's
is there
checking.
Anyone checking?
Yeah, this could happen to Britney Spears, you know, at like the height of her career, you know? Yeah, and so imagine all the people that are not Britney Spears, that don't have anyone, it's like total abuse. You know, this is total abuse that this woman went through. And I also thought it was interesting, the song, like one of my favorite songs by her is the Work Bitch song, but that she made that song like while this was happening and she was like working in Vegas and stuff and like not allowed like not to work, but she also like wasn't allowed to have a life and was locked up. And then she made that song that was like, yeah, really, that's art right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it is.
Yeah. She's like, hello, help me. Please help. but without saying it. Saying it, but
I feel
songs.
Like you could look back at a number of her songs and say that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's the song Lucky, like from like the late 90s, where she's like this sad pop star. Even like Circus, that was at the height of like the paparazzi, and that was at the beginning of the conservatorship. I mean, not to like go into like a deep philosophical thing over like Britney Spears music, but like,
do it. I'm here for it.
She kind of was like, in a very pop way, kind of narrating what was actually happening, mm-hmm. but it was just done in like this very slick, pop friendly.
Because that's her art form.
Mm-hmm.
She's definitely a true artist, the way she talks about everything, you know?
Yeah, she knew her best material, I think. I mean, the thing that I'm glad that she's getting, like, credit for is, like, her Blackout album that came out around, I mean, it was during, like, when she was first institutionalized and, like, shaved her head and, like, during the divorce and, like, postpartum. Like, she had so much going on. But she, like, knew that was her best album. And critically, I feel like that's when people were kind of starting to look at her like, oh, she's making things that, like, they're unusual for pop music. Or, like, the sound is unusual. And she was in charge of it. And I just, I don't know. She continuously gets just like a hard rap, like it always has. But yeah, I definitely think there's more like to her. And I think that the book is really rebellious. Like, I think it's a rebellious book.
It's great. No, and like, as she also talked about like her boyfriends and how they like, you know, they would be sleeping around or whatever, but then she would be like painted as this whore, slut, girl or whatever. And like, yeah, it's just like, this is like the epitome of like the woman's life for forever, you know, but like even this can even happen to Britney Spears and just like such a severe extent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it's great that she wrote this book and told her side of the story, but she said her sister wrote a book. You know, everybody else is writing books about her and telling their version and making mm-hmm. money off of her. It's so gross. Mm-hmm. It's so gross. Mm-hmm. I definitely have a lot more respect for her. Before, I didn't really think about her. It's like a pop star. But mm-hmm. But yeah, no, she's like, she's a real person.
Yeah.
Pop stars are people too.
Yeah.
You know? And how mm-hmm. that guy, oh my God, I knew that I didn't like Kevin Federline before, because like, obviously, but after reading this, it's like, what a fucking dick. And that, yeah, someone keeps your kids from you, and then like, your mom is going to go insane. Yeah, you can't do that. Little kids, little babies, you know, an infant kid and a toddler. And mm-hmm. yeah, moms are going to go crazy and like climb the fence and try to break into your house because it's their fucking kid. They should, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A good mom should do that.
Yeah, especially like she was a new mom. She also, I believe, was suffering from postpartum. Like, why wouldn't she just completely bug out? She had every reason to.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, of course. Like, like, of course that would happen. That's another mm-hmm. good point as well, postpartum. With all these women that have talked about it publicly, like Brooke Shields and now Britney Spears. And like, I had a friend who described it as like when she had her son, like she said, literally, she felt like she was walking, like taking steps down into hell. Like she said, it was like I am now in Hades and I cannot leave this underworld. And like, I'm going to be trapped here forever. Like she said, it was like epically horrendous. And of course people are just like, no, but you should be happy because you're a new mom. And if you're not, just take some medication, you know. But it's like, why don't we talk about, wouldn't it be much more interesting to talk about like what's going on that happens to women, you know?
Mm-hmm. And why
it can't be just hormones. Yeah. Like, I'm sure hormones have an effect. Hormones definitely affect everyone. But like, yeah, so it's something, yeah. I don't have the answer. I don't have any mm-hmm. kids, but I can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It would be much more interesting to talk about the complexity of all of these things rather than like, oh, that shouldn't happen and you should just medicate it away.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe people have negative feelings sometimes when they have kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, of course.
It's a big job.
More so than people admit, yeah.
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 It's a big lifelong job that you can't get out of. You can't return the puppy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not even sure why. I've been like on kind of like a celebrity memoir kick.
Ooh, what else recently. Did you read?
I started Priscilla Presley's book, Elvis and Me, that the movie Priscilla is based on. It's really interesting. It's like, I mean, it is, she's analyzing Elvis and like their relationship, her role in it. Yeah, but it's interesting, like, I guess with any memoir, and this is why like I'm picky and choosy with memoirs, you could sort of give like this surface, I mean, you know this, you just wrote one, like you can give this sort of like surface narrative for the reader, like you can sort of write for the reader and it could be sort of boring, or you can like actually bring them inside and like inside your head and try your best to like explain that to someone or to explain that to an audience. And it's never going to turn out exactly how you picture it. But I think that there's something in the exchange of like trying to explain something here and then transmitting it to someone else. And to me, what interests me is like the in-between period of like, execution of executing it and like what it sort of turns or morphs into. And I think like with Priscilla Presley's book, you can, and even with the movie too, I mean, I hate online headlines now because it's just clickbait, but like some of them like really simplified it. Like Elvis was a groomer, which like, yeah, I'm sure like he was, or it's debatable that he was, but, or I saw one that was like, was Elvis evil? Like, it's just so, it's so stupid. But like, I was thinking about Priscilla Presley. That book came out in 1985. So that was like 8 years after he died. She was probably in her mid to late 30s at that point that she wrote it. And she's looking back, like as a reflection of starting when she was 14, when she met him, and sort of, explaining the point of view of a 14-year-old girl, sort of analyzing this person who is going to become her husband, and then doing it post-death, like post his death, as a mother in her 30s. I just think it's really interesting. There's just like a lot of factors into what it is that you're reading.
Yeah, I really want. I really want to check that book out because we have such a small town that it's like a movie comes and sometimes you have to see it like right when it comes.
Yeah,
it might only have one showing.
Yeah,
yeah, like Sunday, Poor Things is playing, and I'm like, we have to go. But Priscilla played when I was still working because I get off work at 7. A lot of times they start at like 6:30 or 7. And I'm like, So I didn't get to see it, and it only had the one showing,
yeah.
And it disappeared. But it will be streaming soon.
Yeah.
Also, May, December, I want to see, which has one showing in April, so I can't miss it.
Of all people, you need to see May, December.
I have to see May, December.
It's, yeah, I really liked it. It's Todd Haynes. He, like, really plays with genre in it, but it's, like, a psychoanalyst's dream. not only because of the content, but it's sort of, like, are you watching a melodrama? I mean, there's this questions of like, is it a melodrama? Is it a comedy? Is it a drama? Is it a psychological drama? Is it like at points, does it resemble a horror movie? And the thing is, it's all of it. And it just like weaves like this. And the actors, while they're like deeply in the role, they know what they're making. Like they're aware that it's about 8 different genres. So I think you would... it's up your alley.
Yeah, I have to check it out. I remember that whole case and then finding out that they ended up getting married, even though she went to jail a bunch of times or whatever. Mm-hmm. And having like 3 kids or something.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, I was I think I'm his exact age. So yeah, I remember that.
Totally. But I definitely want to check out Priscilla. I saw the Elvis movie and thought it was really good. But that's the other thing about that time. Like it was pretty normal to get married when you were like super young. Like my mom got married when she was 16 and like Marilyn Monroe got married when she was like 16. So it's like really common to get married so young. And it's like, yeah, maybe he's a groomer probably, but like kind of all guys were at that time. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that was like the culture was a groomer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that went like, I mean, I feel like that went well into the 70s.
Yeah. Where the culture was like that not that long ago. And it's still like that a lot of places. It's been kind of the norm of humankind for like ever. I'm not saying that makes it okay. I'm just saying that it's been the norm for a long time. Mm-hmm. And still is probably more the norm. Actually, I've been thinking about this a lot. Like the way that we think culture should be is actually, it's like so kind of rare in that like, not a lot of people practice culture in the same way. And and the idealized way I have where like everyone can do what they want and whatever. Like I'm even realizing moving to Sweden, like I am not normal. You know, I don't have any kids. I got married at 39. You know, it's like society is really set up for like this specific thing. Like you pay a lot of taxes, but your kids get free schooling. And like, you know, this is how it's set up for this like nuclear family people that work a 9-to-5 job. And it's like really becoming very obvious to me here. Cause it's like when we were in Stockholm, we were Carl and all his artist friends. That was one thing. And I didn't really live the apartment much. But the more I like, you know, move around, I'm like, this place is like in some ways very modern. Like their like trains are really good and their banking system and everything's through apps and there's no cash and this kind of thing. Like super futuristic. I don't know if having no cash is good, but that's the way we're headed. But in some ways it's like very provincial. And then you think worldwide, like a lot of people are still in patriarchal structures and like, you know, it's not okay to be queer and, you know, people get beaten or killed, you know? And so like, it's not good, but like, it's still the norm in a lot of places, sadly. Like we're working towards something that we want to be like more universal, but like, it's actually pretty rare.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. So I went running last night and I was sort of thinking in terms of that. And I mean, obviously patriarchy and the nuclear family, it's just sort of embedded. Like it's just a lot of it's embedded. And I think a lot of it, if you choose to, you have to sort of undo that wiring. And it is, I mean, the outside world is largely catered to straight people and nuclear families. Like it's just what it is. But then I was thinking of like, not even queer people, but like queerness in a way. And like, I wrote about this in my book years ago. I just like had this visual of it, of like, I viewed it like a plane. Like it's like this flat plane and you can kind of go anywhere with it. You could lead many different lives. You don't have like this set structured lifestyle. There's really nothing. There's no norm of it. So it to me, I just like, I wrote about how like there's something experimental in queerness and queer lifestyle and how you can kind of do anything with it. There's possibilities where, but it's like, if you don't realize that, you just may never know. And it doesn't matter like what your sexuality or gender is, but I think because we're automatically given this patriarchal structure of a ladder, really, but no matter who you are, if you see it and you choose to not live that way, there's just a lot of unknotting, I think you have to do.
Constantly.
To live a different life, yeah.
And then you keep bumping up against it. You're like, why is that happening? You're like, oh, right. Because I in this like patriarchal nuclear family structured society.
Yeah.
I see. It's not made for people like me.
Totally.
Weirdos. It's not made for the queerdos.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not.
No, it's not. But that's, we persist anyway.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So also, then I'll also mention Matthew Perry's book. Because yeah, reading Britney's and Matthew Perry's back to back is very interesting.
Pick his up after he died?
Yeah. I just picked them both up over the winter break. And I was thinking of picking his book up when it came out. And I saw him on Colbert or something like that. But then I was like, no, I'm trying not to buy so many books. I have so many books. But I had to buy these two and read them after he died and everything. But I definitely, like, for him, I feel like the issue there, I definitely have more sympathy for Britney Spears. And, like, because she was just abused. And Matthew Perry, as he kept saying, like, was doing it to himself. But obviously it was, like, a psychological problem. But, like, I don't like the model of, like, alcoholism being a disease, because it makes it seem as if people are helpless and, like, they can't control themselves. And I feel like if, like, this guy needed psychoanalysis, honestly. He had a lot of money. If they had put him in psychoanalysis instead of, like, into these, like, hospital, like, AA program kind of things, I think he would have loved it, because I think he would have loved, like, talking about himself and, like, getting to understand where all this was coming from. And I think it really would have helped him, because so I feel like his book was a big fail, like, his life was a big fail on the medical industry. And, like, you know, he kept saying in the book, like, you know, people didn't want him to die in their hospital because he was this guy from Friends, you know? And so they just, like, make sure he was okay and patch him up and, like, get him out of there as quickly as possible. And on the other hand, they would, like milk him basically for money in these, like, programs where he, I mean, he went to, like, rehab like 35 times or something, you know? All right. Like, yeah, it was, like, insane. And it was, like, I don't think – I do have sympathy for him. I didn't mean to say I didn't have sympathy for him. But I have more sympathy for Britney, because what a plight. But in his case, he was kind of, like – he was wronged by the medical – the prominent dominant medical care system and the way they think about these issues. Because, like, you can give someone all the medication in the world. You're just, like, switching his alcohol addiction for another addiction. And then he got addicted to fucking opiates. Yeah, and he ended up on opiates, which is horrible and obviously has happened to so many millions of people. And so you're just, like, switching one problem for the other without getting to the root of, like, why does he have this problem in the first place? He just, like, seemed to have, like, this, like, hole inside that he was trying to fill, and, like, even becoming famous and buying all these houses and, you know, dating Julia Roberts and all this stuff, like, didn't make him feel better. Just, like, had this void. And psychoanalysis is great for the void.
Where did he grow up?
He's Canadian, like Toronto. Yeah, and then he moved to LA because his dad was an actor. He talks about his dad being the Old Spice man, and that he would see his dad when he lived in Canada, like, all over billboards and stuff, but didn't see him much in person. And then his mom, you know, got a new family, basically. And then he went to live with his dad in LA and became an actor too. And he also, like, he says things like, I guess that's what made me feel a little less sympathetic, because he says things like, you know, these things always happen to me, like, oh, my life's so difficult. But, like, literally he became an actor, like, he was, like, at a diner, like, chatting with girls and making them laugh when he was, like, in high school or something. And someone was like, hey, I want you to be in my film. You know what I mean? So it's like, you're pretty lucky.
This is going to be a unpopular opinion. But, like, so the thing that went kind of viral when he passed away, it was, like, an interview or multiple interviews, because I feel like he said this multiple times, but it was, like, he doesn't want to be thought of as Chandler from Friends. He wants to be remembered as someone who is always helping someone. And, like, the thing that makes me laugh a little bit about that is, like, I just thought it sounded douchey. I just thought it was sort of, like, I want to be remembered as someone who helps. Like, I don't know.
He is Chandler.
Yeah. Also,
you just be, like, happy that he's Chandler and that he has
billions of dollars. I don't know. Like, if it was truly charitable, does everyone have to know that? I don't know.
It was a very LA thing to say.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I thought it was, like, a very actorly LA thing. I mean, I'm sure his intentions were, like, wonderful, and I'm sure he did help a lot of people.
Rehabs and things like that. And
yeah, it was an LA actor thing to say.
super. And and I think he must have known that he was going to die soon and wrote this memoir, you know. It's sad when you read the memoir after he dies, because literally throughout the whole thing, he's like, I'm just so amazed and happy that I'm still alive. He does that like, I don't mean to laugh so much, but he says that like 10 times or something. And I'm like, but you're not alive. Yeah. And the book ends with him like, you know, look like in his, he keeps buying houses and trying to get a better view, and the bigger and better doesn't solve it. It's like the classic, he has the classic like symptom of our era of like, you know, white male, super classic privileged life, but always feeling like it's never enough. It's not enough. I'm not enough. You know, I can get the Ferrari and the car and the girl and the job and the fame, and it's still not enough. And it's because this is why psychoanalysis is so good. Psychoanalysis is supposed to help you realize that, like, that's because all these external things that you are trying to fill the void with, that's not really what you need or want. You have to figure out, like, how to stop doing that. It's like on the one hand, that drive to, like, do more and better, like, keeps us, like, you know, creating new things and trying to improve our lives and stuff. But like, if you really believe that like getting a car or a house or a girl or whatever is going to like solve all your internal issues, like you're just really off base. But a lot of people believe this. And our whole culture is built around feeding people this, you know, if you just buy this or you look like this or you get this skin cream or whatever, you're going to feel better, you know, but it's not true.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of sucks because it's like, part of me feels like that's such an like, that it's really antiquated, and that like culturally, I would hope that we're past that. You know what I mean?
We are not.
But I feel like, especially with like rise of social media and TikTok and everything that is so image based that you can manipulate. I mean, I was talking about this with a coworker the other day. The thing that I find like sick is, so Google has this phone now where you, or a program, I think it's a phone, I don't know. You can edit, basically you can, if there was like a family photo and you didn't like how someone looked or something, you can edit them and put in another picture and just create your own photo. Like you can just create your own memory. So yeah, no, I mean, I guess we're not past that.
Not at all. We might be getting more into it, sadly.
Yeah.
Because of social media and all the advertising going on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, would love to believe like, oh, that was so 80s, but no.
Yeah. I mean, it's scary to think like collectively, I don't know. I just don't want to be around like a whole society that's like not going past the surface of something. That's scary.
It's really scary. And it's, I don't want to pick on America, but it's a very American thing.
No, it's American. Like, it is
maybe
very
American. Maybe I do need to pick on America.
I think,
but
it's the
very
most
American. Yeah. And also living here has made me realize, like, I knew that all the movies and stuff were, like, all over the world or whatever, but I didn't realize, like, to what an extent, like, cultural imperialism from America, it's a really real thing. And like all the kids like here, they think they have the same issues as in the States, but it's like, this is a different country, you know? Like, but like America has made its issues everyone's problem.
Everyone's issues. Yeah.
I mean, not everyone is just concerned about America's problems.
Mm-hmm. it's like America's like a fame, it's like a fame whore in a way.
Yeah, sure. And the image of what it's projected in movies and stuff like that. You know, and I'm still taking Swedish. I've graduated Swedish for Immigrants classes, and now I'm in Swedish as a second language. Mm-hmm. And it made me so sad the other day because, like, most of my classmates are from Syria, from the war. And this one woman was like, oh, you're American? Like, have you ever been to Hollywood? And it makes me so sad that, like, like everybody, like, has this idealized image. Like, oh, Hollywood. She was like, I would love to go there. But it's just from, like, watching movies. And I'm just thinking, like, if you ever saw Hollywood as, like, the Walk of Fame, you know? Like, it's not like, what you imagine it is at all. Not. Mm-mm. But, like, everybody believes it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone believes the image, the imaginary.
I mean, it's sort of like just the American propaganda.
Yeah, it's worked. I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. a lot of for a lot of people, it has mm-hmm. worked.
Mm-hmm.
It's very unfortunate, and it's made people like, it's like this like idea of like focusing on the surface, you know, it's supported that, you know, doesn't want people to look under the surface. Cause if you look under the surface, you'll see how fucked up everything is. So like, no, just stay here where it's glossy and shiny, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know what's going to happen with this next election. So
yeah,
we'll see. That's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Freud actually said that he came to America once in 1909. And even then he was like, America's going to be the end of civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the next like 6 months are going to be telling of what, I don't know. I mean, obviously it's like Trump and Biden.
Again.
The nominees. Yeah. I just feel like there's going to be, I don't know. I feel like within the next 6 months, there's going to be like weird wrenches thrown in. Not totally sure what I mean by that. I just feel like, I don't know. I just have this weird feeling like there's going to be surprises. I don't even know what that means. I don't know if that means he's going to get convicted and then hopefully. But
he'll
like,
get to become president and then pardon himself.
Yeah, like it's something like, I just feel like something really like wild is, I mean, it already is wild, but I feel like something absurd is going to happen. And like, that's what I mean, Trump is absurd, but that's what I remember a lot from 2020, but the absurdity of like his antics, just like smoke bombing protesters and like going to a church that wasn't even open and doing a photo shoot and holding a Bible upside down like an idiot, like that level of sort of absurdity.
Right.
I feel
and when
like
they did that like conference in front of like a porn store or something.
Oh yeah. And, yeah. No, cause they got the address wrong.
Oh, my God.
Of the Four Seasons. I think, yeah. I don't know. It was like supposed to be Four Seasons or something, but I think it was like, it was either like a porn or a mechanic.
It was like a fertilizer store or something.
Yeah.
I just turned it into porn in my mind, I guess. That's what my mind does.
I feel like it could have been a mechanic. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Something like that. Anyway, it was the wrong place and they did it anyway. No, it's totally absurd. And it's just like totally tragic. And like, how is it even happening? How can you like attempt to overthrow the government and then still become the president? Like, I don't know. It just shows the level of corruption. I'm convinced that the reason they don't like actually put him in jail or anything is because all of those politicians are so dirty and have done like similar things, just not to the same extent, that if they like open the door of like putting one of them in jail, like so many of them can go to jail. Mm-hmm. And that they won't like, they're like have this like silent agreement that they won't do that to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're all so fucking dirty.
What I was thinking was like, I don't know, like how like familiar, like caught up you are with stuff, but Nikki Haley, like the other Republican runner, I don't know. Biden's team released a statement saying like, you know, going into like 2024 with Trump as the nominee, which like he is not yet. But I was thinking, think about all of the money and the prepping that Biden's team has done with trusting that Trump is going to be the nominee. Let's say he's not. Their entire campaign is fucked. So it's almost like they almost need him to be the nominee, because what is the election material going to be if he's not?
They need him to be the nominee so that he looks so bad that Biden looks good in comparison, even though Biden is awesome.
Like, yeah, he's not looking, he hasn't been looking so hot in a bit.
Since before he became the nominee.
Yeah.
I was like, really, you have all these amazing people. You could put up Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, and you put up fucking Biden. Like, what are you talking about? Why? Like, oh, it's the same shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's almost like they kind of try to sell it like, that's your trustworthy uncle.
No,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Democrats have been winning elections because they're not as bad as Republicans for, like, as long as I've been alive.
Totally.
It's like, can you guys get a different platform? Except for Obama. Obama's the only one who, like, actually, like, had a personality and was like, yeah, okay, I want to vote for that guy. But everyone else is just like, well, I'm not the Republican.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Well, we're at the end of our hour, Jason. Aww. It's so fun to chat with you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you for having me.
Everyone should check out your book, Can I See Your Niche? And let's make a book event in New York when I'm there.
Yeah, let's do that.
That would be so fun.
Look forward to that. Mm-hmm.
Will you be in charge of picking the best place?
Sure.
You pick the best place, and I'll email you about it. We can set it up.
Excellent. All right, well, I'll look into that.
We're going to have a book launch.
Yay.
And that way all of our friends can come there, and that's how I can see everybody at once. Since I'm only going to be there for like a second. Win.
Yeah.
It's a win-win-win.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Rendering Unconscious. You've just heard a discussion with Jason Hoff. If you're in or around New York, join us on Saturday, May 11th for our book launch party at Quimby's Bookstore in Brooklyn. Follow us on social media at HoffWit and Rawson_ or at Rendering Unconscious Instagram for more information. There's also more information at renderingunconscious.org and in the show notes for this episode. And you can follow Quimby's Bookstore at quimbysnyc.com and Quimby's Bookstore NYC at Instagram. As always, huge thanks to Carl Abrahamson for providing the intro and outro music for Rendering Unconscious podcast. Visit his website, carlabrahamson.com, for more information about Carl, and follow him at his new Substack, thefenriswolf.substack.com. Be sure to check out previous episodes with Jason Hoff. He was a very early guest on episode number 16 of Rendering Unconscious, as well as episode 91. And there was a group discussion with Jason, Tom Bland, and Cy Valdez for Rendering Unconscious episode 187, where we talked about queer writing, poetry, sexuality, art, and magic. And be sure to check out Jason's other books, Bent Book, Love Case, and Harsh Cravings. And now the song, Contorted, Aroused, from the album Magic City, my latest collaboration with Pete Murphy. Available at petemurphy.bandcamp.com. You can also listen to our music at Spotify and other streaming services. Just search for Vanessa Sinclair and Pete Murphy. Enjoy. Contorted. Aroused. Contorted. Contorted. Aroused. Contorted. Contorted. Aroused. Contorted. Aroused. Contorted. Aroused. Contorted. 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 She began to cry out, but she couldn't care less. Fuck. Betrayal. Contorted. Betrayal. Aroused. Contorted. Betrayal. Aroused. Contorted. Betrayal. Aroused. Contorted. Betrayal. Aroused.